this is Zoa.
This is Kaya.
And this is Meg, and we're Plum Vision.
And you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
Nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Oh, good afternoon, out and abouters. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and or 92.3 FM. I am your host, Maeve. And yes, my voice doesn't sound very good. I apologize. But I'm sure you could adjust your radio and make me sound better, maybe. Today we have producer Chris Jensen and director Troy Nickerson from Theater on the Verge's Hand to God. Hi guys, how's it going?
Hey there, thanks for having us.
I'm so glad to have you guys back in the studio. Or Chris, I think you were the only one last time. And,
yep.
And Theater on the Verge is such a cool concept, and the shows you guys do are stuff that you're not going to see anyplace else, I don't think, in Spokane.
Hope not.
The
three shows we've done so far have all been regional premieres, and we're really proud of that.
That's right.
We're not doing Shrek right now, so that's three or four Shreks happening.
Yeah, the Shrek bomb.
Yes.
We're going to dive into what this show's about, because I went and saw it on Friday, and I'm still just amazed by the performances, amazed by the story. I mean, like all good plays, it had those really sad parts and then the really funny parts and then just super weird stuff that I really, really loved. And one of you guys just kind of give a synopsis for the listeners?
So Hand to God takes place in a church basement in Cypress, Texas, where people are trying to put together a puppet show for Sunday service. And one of the puppets starts going off script and saying things you're not supposed to say in a church basement. And what's going on a little deeper than this is the kid attached to the puppet is grieving the death of his father. And a lot of what is coming out of him is just rage and a lot of feelings that I think, again, are not really acceptable sometimes in that space. It ends up being really funny at times. But like you said, there's some especially interactions between this boy and his mother, who they're both grieving, that are really, they're beautiful and they're heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And so it hits all of these different notes, and it is very strange because it's pretty clear, or at least the play makes pretty clear that the puppet is at some level demonic, or that or that the kid is at some level possessed. But really, I think what it's really talking about is just the ways in which when we're not allowed to talk about things directly, they tend to come out sideways.
Yeah.
I think that's really what it's about.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
Was it Troy, directing, when you direct people, do you find yourself talking to the puppet when it's time to direct the
absolutely.
Puppet?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Especially with Declan, because he's so masterful with it.
Yeah. Right.
Declan is our lead.
Declan
Sheehan.
There was definite times that I would find myself addressing it.
Let me tell the audience, because they probably, maybe they want to know who's in the play. Got Declan Sheehan as Jason, Karen Hoagland as Marjorie, Eleanor Weitz as Jessica, Noah Grabiel is Timothy, and Doug Dawson, who's kind of, he's the main guy down there, Pastor Greg.
Yeah.
And everybody does such a marvelous job, but the job that is probably the hardest to pull off would be Declan, who has his puppet, who is demonically, because is it Leroy? What was it?
Tyrone.
Yeah, Tyrone.
Yeah, yeah.
Tyrone is really a very bad puppet.
He's a very, very bad puppet.
Yeah, and he can't even at a certain point take the puppet off his hand. Like, the puppet will not allow
him. Yeah, will not allow him. Is this going to be really hard for Declan when he gets done, you know, to say goodbye to his
We have pictures of Declan napping with the puppet that are a little disturbing. No, that is seriously. We didn't get Declan until late. We didn't get him till March 2nd because
oh,
he was
goodness.
Away.
Wow.
May 2nd.
Okay, wow.
And he was at school, so Farron had, our puppet maker, had sent him a practice puppet. So he came in, but then the new Tyrone and him they're very attached. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they are, you know, you can just, the mastery. Had he done any puppet work before that?
No.
Nothing, huh?
No, there's a bit in this early on in the show where he does Who's On First with the puppet.
Yes.
That is just masterful.
It is.
He was masterful the first time he did it for us.
Yeah.
We were like, yes.
When it was his hand.
Yes, just like that, please. Let's do that.
And you know, it's funny because when he starts doing it, there's some of us know exactly where this is going.
Yeah, yeah.
See, here, it must be fun in the audience to hear who's picking this up.
Right? Yeah, it's fun in general just watching the audience react to this show.
Yeah.
You know, because people are... they're shocked. They're delighted. They're screaming with delight at times.
Yeah.
And then they find themselves crying.
Yeah.
So it's really.
And that was my journey. That was my journey through the script. Like the first time when I read it after we decided to do it, I was like, whoa, this is terrifying. All I saw was language. All I saw was horrible language. Crazy situations. Oh my God. What are we going to do?
Yeah. Or protesting because of the religious aspects.
Yeah. And
that.
Dealing with religion, especially for a little gay Catholic boy who's still, you know, I wouldn't tear those pictures out of the Bible. I mean, out of the Bible. I was very clear about that.
Yes.
But, and then when we started doing it, we started with some of the funnier moments and that kind of stuff that had more choreography involved. But then just, like when we're working the dialogue, as things revealed themselves to me, I was blown away by the complexity of it. I've dealt with grief. I know what grief feels like.
Yeah, I know you have. And I was going to ask you because one of the characters, well, not the character,
dies of a heart attack. Yeah,
dies of a heart attack. Yeah. And how was that for you to kind of?
Well, you know, it was enlightening. I mean, like for me to be able to express that in some way, like for her to dig into that. And, you know, this man is hitting on her after 6 months after her husband being gone.
Yeah.
You know, and the gravity of that is crazy. But grief causes such weird things. And for this mother that is grieving so hard that she can't even let her son grieve, right? Because she's pushing it out of herself so hard. You know, that it wasn't until this puppet comes to life that forces both of them. And it was just all of that stuff, the weight of that stuff that I kept finding with everybody that was blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And then fill it in with the stuff that was like, I mean, I spent an hour and a half one night choreographing two puppets have sex.
Yes.
You know,
oh my
I
God.
Mean,
well, yeah.
That was a blast.
It was really,
you know, you run out of ideas, like positions, and then it's finally just ripping off her hand and raw dog. I mean, what do you do? I can say raw dog.
I think so.
I think so.
I haven't moved towards the button to push the dump button.
Well, and I think one of the things I love about it too is that none of this gets tidally resolved. Ending,
right?
Yeah, and I won't reveal the ending for those who might come see it, but the ending is just, it gives a little glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not like, oh, now everything's better. It's like, no, now we're going to maybe start toward getting better.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're left.
Really? And no accountability yet, you know?
Very left open, which I'm surprised that more people haven't been a little unsettled by that.
I've had people say that to me, mainly clients that I have time to actually spend time with talking about it. That has been something. It's that blows their mind that nobody has.
Well, and it's funny. I bet you, Declan, because I've had people come up to me in plays that I've been in that the character is sort of ambiguous. What happens? Well, what happened?
Yeah.
I mean, did they? I'm like, well, I don't know. That's not the play.
Yeah, it's me.
So I bet you, Declan gets asked that all the time.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Did you worry that people maybe did you worry or did you look forward to people possibly walking out?
Both.
Yeah.
And we haven't had anybody getting up in a huff and walking out. Yeah. That's really what I was...
If you hire me, I'll do
that
it.
That's kind of what I was hoping for. I mean, really, we've had a few people discreetly leave at intermission, and we're not sure what that was all about.
Oh, yeah.
But we still haven't had someone just, like, you know, throw their cocktail napkin down and walk out the door.
This is happening. But it surprises me, too, because I know people that have come to this with very strong beliefs and different things that have
simulated sex scenes. I mean, not just of the robot or the robot,
the puppet
variety.
The first one is strongly simulated. You know, I mean, it's
there's not much left to the imagination.
It's probably the farthest I've ever gone. I mean, other than, and you know what show I actually equate this to a little bit, and people kind of look at me in an odd way, but I associate a bit with Equus. You know, I mean, there's a certain amount of that, the replacing that horse with the picture of Christ. Yeah. You know, I mean, it kind of has that vibe.
He's acting out in this way that his parents don't understand and are trying to deny.
The posters that you guys have up on there, where did you find those posters? Because I used to work in campus ministry, and I saw those, and I thought, if I could have got those posters for my office, I would have paid a lot of money. Where did you find those?
Well, our thinking was that in this church, in the world of this play, they would probably create their own posters using AI.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have a bunch. If you look closer at the bulletin board up there, there's a sheep with human eyes. There's a praying hands with six fingers. It's all these creepy AI images.
There's an American eagle with a Big Mac.
With a Big Mac in its talons.
Yes,
and in the posters themselves, we have a very blonde kind of crazy looking Jesus.
He's super like beyond happy.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's not right. Yes. It's not okay. Yeah. Whatever's going on with him is not okay.
Yeah, he's
surrounded by children, and at his feet is Mary Magdalene as Carolyn Leavitt, with a big cross around her neck, washing his feet.
Just have designed these and then had him print it out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
It gave us another thing. I mean, right now, like, everything is so politically correct, and this show kind of breaks all of that. We get to make fun of AI. We get to use it and make that joke as well. You know, I mean, and that's one thing cool about the show. There's no rules, and you better go as far as you can, or it won't work.
Oh, right. That's a good.
If you don't push
that
it as far, it's going to be awkward.
Well, when you had you seen the play before?
No, I've never seen it. No.
So did. When you stage this and you have these puppets, is there some direction on how the puppets are supposed to look, or is that sort of up to you on how you can make the puppets look?
You know, it was kind of up to Farron.
He was an 18-year-old puppet designer.
Yeah,
who we found.
The work on the puppets is spectacular.
Amazing.
And he did this stuff for
Rudolph. A puppeteer who doesn't puppet.
Right, he did, what's that?
He's a puppeteer who doesn't puppet.
Oh,
like,
really?
He doesn't puppet, he just loves to make them.
He did the puppets for Rudolph.
The ostrich and cowboy were outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, so people who have seen that, they may want to just go to see the puppets.
One of the things about the Hand of God is that one puppet actually grows throughout the show, and so we had to have three different versions of Tyrone, and that was part of the challenge. And Farron didn't hardly even needed any direction.
No, truly.
He just kept checking in with us, and we're like, yes, like that.
Yes, beautiful, thank you.
And you had a stunt puppet in there too, didn't you?
Yes, the first one gets torn up, yes. And so it had to be designed in such a way where it could be torn, and then we could put it back together.
And, you know, I don't think Farron's used to having, you know, like in Rudolph, the puppets didn't have a lot of, you know, they didn't get quite as used as the puppets.
Yeah.
Nobody's, you know. Saying, "Oh, boobs are falling off. Can you come in and repair that?" You know, so that, I mean, there was a lot of repair work because these puppets, you know, get fist fights and choked.
We had to do repair work on our stage because, like, the opening night, we broke a table.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and it gets a little rowdy.
Yeah, it is. Especially where you guys had us, it was like, man, this is right. Real, but that's the beauty about the Hamilton Studios too. Is they're all just great seats. It's almost like a dinner club
sort of feel to it.
Yeah. You know,
it just makes it unique.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, I think you guys did well with the puppets for sure, and I just am in awe of the dialogue between the characters and the puppets, you know, on their hand. And it was just like,
The one that blows me away is the scene with Declan in the bedroom.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I still watch that from the back of the house every day, and just, I can't even say where the voice is Passover.
Right. Yeah. Right. And for context, this is where the puppet is basically bringing Declan onto his side and saying, let's do this thing together.
Waking him up in bed.
Yeah, let's do this together.
It's brilliant. Yeah. It's just brilliant. And I mean, everybody, every character in the show is brilliant, but I also think Karen is the mother, and her journey is so wild to her devastation at the end.
Yeah.
It's just to play this like coldness and not caring at moments into this. Just
kicks him out of the car.
Devastating. Yeah. Devastating.
Which, you know, that's usually the advantage. Yeah.
And to be kicked out of a few cars
and to be able to, in the midst of all this outlandish stuff, to really find the truth, which she does. And it's, I mean, she's a, I think it's the kind of performance that can almost get lost in all of this sometimes because it's so true.
I think that would be the hard thing, you know, for the rest of the cast members because, you know, Declan has to walk such a tightrope that these are all excellent performances, outstanding performances.
They're all
five fantastic. But what Declan has to pull off is a magic trick.
Yes.
You know,
yes, and it has that extra level.
And he pulls it off, you know? And so
he's a 20-year-old actor, and his skill. I mean,
his instincts.
He has that old soul of Danny Kaye, of some of those things that you don't see a lot in young actors anymore that have that timing and that that kind of thing,
and who have the maturity to like to wait for the laugh. And to allow the audience to have their own experience each night and to sometimes let the laughs, just like roll through the audience and he just holds it and allows that to happen, you know, and allows it to build. And that takes,
And I feel like the whole cast has really kind of gotten to that place where they ride that ride so perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's cool to
where
watch
we don't lose many lines, which I love. They allow the audience to laugh and then they'll move on. It's not a long show. We can hold. hold for a laugh.
That's the beauty of it too, is you know, it is it's not a long show at all. Yeah. Like what maybe
45 minute first act.
35?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was,
I mean, intermission is almost as long as second act.
ordering wine and going to the restaurant.
It could take a while. Well, we're going to break for our 20-minute after the hour stuff, and then we're going to come back and, you know, I want to ask about, you know, think about maybe this puppet business. Like, you know, were you apprehensive about this at all? Anyway,
okay.
So why don't we let people know before we break how they can get tickets to go see Hand to God.
Sure, Hand to God plays for three more performances this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in the Listening Room at Hamilton Studio. That's at 1427 West Dean in the West Central neighborhood. You can get tickets at www.theateronthetheverge.com. That's theater with an E-R on theverge.com.
Perfect.
And we do have a code right now.
Oh, yeah, we have a code. It's a 20% off code.
Oh.
Take 20.
Take 20 is the code. Okay. Yeah. And I'm going to load up the computer with my stuff. But while I'm doing that, I'm going to have what's turning out to be our the Green Warriors kind of turning into my house band here. And this is their song, Parrot. It's a quickie, so my fingers have to be quicker.
Thank you. Out and About receives support from Eastern Washington University, the region's polytechnic, offering an increased emphasis on real-world, hands-on learning to build career-ready skills and a lifelong community. More information at ewu.edu.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com.
Your radio station, KYRS, actively supports the diversity of the Spokane area, celebrating the many voices that make up our region. Our volunteer-run station hosts a variety of shows that feature otherwise unheard perspectives and opinions. In a sense, KYRS is working against institutional racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of oppression simply by existing in opposition to mainstream media. Please make a pledge today by texting Give KYRS to the number 44321. Your support keeps KYRS operating during a time when our community needs free and open media the most.
All right, we're back. And as always, I do my little 20-minute after the hour telling you what's going on in the world, protesting in Spokane. So some things you can do. You can support the Spokane 3 by going to www.pgels.org. There's Get the Ice Out Wednesdays. That's every Wednesday. So it'll be this Wednesday, tomorrow, June 3rd, 1 to 3 p.m. at the ICE Downtown Field Office, and that's on the corner of Washington and Cataldo. Your community, your voice, your say. That is Wednesday night, tomorrow night, 6 p.m. in the City Council Chambers. Our council chambers at City Hall, and you can kind of learn about how to make your voice more effective at City Hall. We love our immigrant neighbors. Thank you, Manzanita House, Thursday, June 4th at 3:30 p.m. That's 222 West Mission Avenue, hosted by the Eastside Gladiators. Spokane Visibility Brigade, those guys who are over the freeway holding the funny signs that people are clutching their, some people with red hats are clutching their chests as they drive underneath. Thursday, June 4th, 4:30 to 5:30 p.m., I-90 overpasses, Arthur, Thor, and Regal. Say It Saturday, which is always, if people aren't familiar with that, that's sort of our little mini No Kings every Saturday. Endless Wars, Blame the Billionaires, that's Saturday, June 6th at 2 p.m., B.A. Clark Park, corner of Empire and Division. And, you know, Mikey Mondays, Monday coming up June 8th, 3 to 4 p.m., Division and Ruby. Say hi to Michael Baumgartner, our representative. Tell people what you think about him. Let's see, Fearless and United Spokane Pride Festival is coming up June 12th through the 13th, 2026. They do still need some volunteers, so if you're looking to do that, go to SpokanePride.org, and there's a way to find that out. There will be a rally for trans rights June 12th at 3 p.m. Riverfront Park. And all sorts of activities are going to be starting for the Pride Festival on June 12th. So go to SpokanePride.org and you can find out more about that. So that's kind of the big, that's sort of the biggie right now. And we're going to come back, and I'm so excited because I've got Troy Nickerson and Chris Jensen from Theater on the Verge's Hand to God, and we are talking about, well, we're talking about Theater on the Verge's Hand to God, coincidentally. So, Troy, getting into, like, puppets, I mean, was that, have you directed puppets before?
I have. Okay. I directed Avenue Q.
Oh, yeah.
I love puppets.
Yeah.
I do. I've always been fascinated by them. As a kid, I would use my blankets and, you know, make faces and stuff. The journey, though, with Declan and his puppet, I mean, other than working with him a little bit about crafting beats and moments, just as I would a scene between two actors, the work he has created
was
really created so much from his characters.
Were you on board for puppets before this?
Well, I was just thinking the other day that I think I was My introduction to comedy was from the original Muppet Show.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, I was very young, but I don't remember being around anything that was positioning itself as comedy before that, to the point that I didn't know that Fozzie Bear was kind of like a version of a certain kind of comic. I didn't know he was just Fozzie, right? I didn't have any larger reference point. And so, and of course I loved Miss Piggy like immediately, but I mean, that original Muppet Show really, really established for me what funny was. And I responded to it so much. And I loved those first few movies. I still love those first few movies. Yeah. So for me, puppets have always been, I mean, from the very beginning, something that for me, I just instantly find them funny.
Everything's funny with puppets.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so too. But you know, you do have people... you know, who don't like they get, you know, who's the big puppet guy?
Yes.
And
Henson.
Who travels around. I had it in my notes, but.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, but then there was also, was it Waylon Flowers and Madam?
Oh,
Jeff Dunham.
Yeah.
Jeff Dunham. But you do have people that are kind of like down on Jeff Dunham or, you know, ventriloquist acts and things like that. But I have always been on board for puppets, and there is something funny to me, like when a puppet gets screwed up or gets hurt.
Oh,
you know?
For sure.
There's something that's just like the inanimacy.
And puppets can get away with things, and it feels like with the show, and sometimes you get away with some of the things we're saying because they're puppets, you know, and not people. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like you did. I don't know if you trust them more or.
There's a certain amount of, I mean, like, you, I think of Cookie Monster, where he just opens his mouth and there's some intern who's just throwing cookies at his mouth and they're just bouncing off. Yeah, it's just like, it's chaotic and funny and weird, and it doesn't really make sense, but you're like, no, he's eating cookies, I guess.
But when they're awful or doing bad.
Yeah.
Bad things, it's hysterical.
Or, you know, what always gets me, it's like when the ventriloquist does, you know, when he says, "Well, now I'm going to drink a glass of water and do my ventriloquism," and then he does his ventriloquism, but he pours the water into the ventriloquist dummy's mouth.
Have you seen the lady that has
always,
the masks?
Yes, it always kills me. It's just like, gets this wet puppet. I don't know.
Well, he talks about his wet puppet in the show. Alone on a Saturday night with your blow dryer.
Yeah.
Yes. No, that made me laugh.
That makes me laugh every night too.
Really hard.
Yes.
Because it's just there's something I don't know. And if, you know, I grew up with Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Oh yeah.
And then in the Bay Area, we had a show. You know, it was like one of these things on the news where the guy who was also the weatherman, he did Dialing for Dollars, and he also did Charlie and Humphrey show, which were these two puppets, a bulldog and a horse, and they did like a Abbott and Costello routine.
I remember that now that you
so
say that.
Funny.
Yeah.
You know, and the writing was really good, and anyway, so I've always been.
And the weird puppets from Mr. Roger, the Land of Make-Believe.
Oh, ooh,
those are some spooky puppets.
I'm introducing him to those. I'm subversive.
What was the merry-go-round lady?
Oh, that was
Lady
Elaine Fairchild.
Yeah.
She freaked me out.
They all freaked me out when I was a kid.
Well, she looks like she's like really a bad drunk.
Yeah, she is. And
she's not. Yeah.
And she got some bad hair.
And she calls them toots. You know, I mean, she's very like too friendly, you know.
Yes.
And, but then you mix it up with the life. Yeah. Oh, I love.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The that's land kinda, of make believe. Yeah. I moved there. In a
oh,
heartbeat.
That was my. I would just wait for the trolley to come. That was my. Yeah. Reason. I wanted to watch that show. I was like, come on, get there.
Yes. But okay, so you know, Ivan, this show. There's a part in it where the opening monologue was so powerful.
And goes deep fast. Like, it's actually about...
That plunges you. Yeah.
It's about the invention of right and wrong.
You're right.
And how we invented right and wrong to control other people. And that the way to get out of doing something, having done something wrong, is to say the devil made me do it. So we created the devil in order to give us an out when we've done something wrong. That's what the opening monologue is about.
Yeah.
And it's a puppet saying this. And it's like, I don't think it's what people are expecting when they come in. They're expecting something a little lighter, and it goes deep and dark fast.
Yeah, really deep and really dark. And then the juxtaposition of this silly looking puppet,
right?
Which later on, when you notice, oh, that puppet has teeth,
yeah, right.
But the silly looking puppet, that it's so good because it does kind of reminds you of like a Muppet. It's designed like a Muppet,
for sure,
right?
It's, you know, friendly Muppet, but it's not a friendly Muppet. So you are kind of like caught off kilter because of what this puppet is saying.
Yeah.
And he's like seducing him, right? Like, I mean, you can see him really like.
Yeah. Well, the script says that he should look like Elmo, but a little off.
Like Elmo doesn't look off.
I mean, I have to admit, I love the Tickle Me Elmo videos that when they apply too much electricity to it. I'm a connoisseur of those. There's something about watching a puff itself destruct that I just love.
Oh my God. It's so, it's one of those mysteries of the universe, the puppets.
Well, and you know, I was thinking because in there's that line of Pontius Pilate in Jesus Christ Superstar, you know, you something puppet, not misguided puppet.
Yeah,
but
you misguided puppet.
That's what it is.
When he screams that, you misguided.
Yeah,
puppet. Martyr.
Misguided martyr.
But
there is a puppet line.
But you know, it's funny because we had done years ago. We had stage left. We were making a lot of content for stuff during COVID, right? So we decided we're going to do this puppet show in up at Manitou over by the Japanese Gardens. So we staged this gorilla puppet show. It was the scripts that kids would write, and then we would act them out. So we had these puppets, and it was just bedlam. And there's people still going to the Japanese Gardens. And I'd always told Michael Schmidt, I really want to do a Jesus Christ Superstar with sock puppets. I mean, like, not good puppets.
Yeah, yeah.
But just like sock especially puppets. Jesus should be like a really, you know, a sock puppet that's seen better days.
Yeah.
And
sock puppet
and
superstar.
So we started singing. I forget what song we started singing, and I have a hand puppet, Oswald the Ostrich. It's like Oswald the Ostrich, and he does his thing. So we starts doing, I forget what Michael's puppet was, but we started doing music from Jesus Christ Superstar as the puppets and the thing. And people stopped, and we got done, they clapped. And I thought, you know, thing's got some legs. And I don't know how much it would cost to get the rights to do a Jesus Christ Superstar with puppets. Look, I'm making a... This is my show, but I am making a pitch to you right now.
I've directed that show twice. I know it pretty well. We could pull it off with
puppets. Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be so cool.
Do they have a Superstar Junior? Like, cut it down a little bit. So.
That's like precious moments. You know, things where they would have like the precious moments Bible.
I'd
go through and like, I just have to see... How did they handle the crucifixion with a precious moments character? You know, a little Roman soldier with a spear looking woeful, you know.
I didn't even know they had that. Is that a thing, really?
It is a thing.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I had a precious moments.
Chris
grew up. See, I grew up Catholic kind of thing, but all the music and all the stuff in the show, Chris picked out because he had
a lot of it's from my childhood.
Yeah. He knew all of these things. I just had statues.
My wife is from like a fundamentalist Christian background and she knew the songs.
Oh, okay, good.
But as Catholic, you know, it's like, songs.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know.
Yeah, we figured it would be a dog whistle thing for certain people in the audience. Yes. Like, and you would know, and every once in a while I hear people laughing when certain songs play. I'm like, oh, they are from the same background. Yeah.
That's the other thing about the show is that there's a lot of Easter eggs in it, like our bulletin board and the music. And there's all sorts of kind of little things. That one of the posters, a little red hat on one of the boys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there's lots of cool little Easter eggs.
I'm And our curtain call song is a Sandy Patty song from, she was a big Christian singer from her 1986 album. And the song is called Let There Be Praise. And what a great curtain call song is to be Let There Be Praise.
And just the name Sandy Patty.
Well, and one of the things I love about it though is watching the cast who do not have this relationship to this music just get out there and dance and just be joyful to this music, because it's a reminder that I loved that music growing up.
Yes.
Yeah, and it really was a big part of my childhood. And to be able to like revisit it now in a different way and to watch people celebrate it and enjoy it just on a completely surface level. And how it, like, sometimes these things that hurt you can also heal you, you know?
That's well said. I think if somebody went to this play, I think it could be a really like a faith strengthening thing to go to this play, right? I mean,
I've told people that I think the play takes faith very seriously.
Yes.
And face value is what you've said,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's easy to lose sight of that because it plays so fast and loose with so many things, but it is really engaging with faith in a very real way.
Well, and I find like the pastor, you know, he's a little creepy at first when he's kind of hitting on her, but the pastor really is a decent human being.
At the end, he says some of those truthful things in the play.
Yeah.
I mean, he says near the end, he says, everyone is struggling. I don't even know what's going on. He has this moment of humility. And
he's also the one at that moment that tries to break through to Jason Nito and grabbing him and touching him and communicating.
He risks. That's a big risky moment for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he says, a man has one voice. Yeah. You know, you got to choose one. You can't.
Who's coming out of this room?
You or that.
Or that.
Yeah.
That was so powerful. Yeah. And it's funny, but it's also, you could take a lot from it. And I think it's one of those plays that you would maybe go with some friends and get drinks afterwards and just start talking and tearing it down piece by piece. And like, what does this mean?
There's so much
rich fodder there, you know?
I think we still are.
Yeah.
Even when I watch every night, I catch another little something.
In part because it doesn't over-explain. Like those, the opening monologue and the closing monologue are written in a way that they're just these broad brush strokes, and they're really getting at some very deep stuff, but they're not over-explaining any of it.
Yeah.
And the more I listen to the closing monologue, it is just seeing some extraordinary things.
When we invented Jesus.
Invented Jesus. But it's really... It's an amazing piece of writing in that way, because it does not, it allows you to actually get there yourself.
Well, it's nominated for 5 Tonys, one of them being Best
Play. And the writer, I was reading up a little bit on him, Robert Askins.
Robert Askins, yeah.
Yeah, he 5 Tony nominations, and then, but he also went on to write, I think, for the Umbrella Academy for TV. So people, his writing is really, has some interesting twists and turns to it, I felt like. So when you do something, I mean, to kind of jump back to talk a little bit about Theater on the Verge, you have this experience. Where do you go from here for your next show? I mean, your mind isn't there yet,
but it's funny, we were just sitting down kind of planning our concert coming up in July. We're doing our first concert.
Okay, what's a concert
originally we were thinking of it as something really songs of, what would you say?
We were talking about for a bit. Well, say the name of the concert.
So the name of the concert is The Art of the Possible, Songs for a Marginally Less Terrible World. Okay. The idea being that people will come in here and just be a little buoyed, you know, and just lift it up a bit.
Yeah.
But we don't want it to be a preachy, we don't want it to be a bunch of protest songs. We just want people to come in and have a really, really nice evening.
Yeah.
And a lot of the songs are about engaging with the wider world in a really meaningful
way.
And
we have seven fantastic singers in Spokane and Coeur d'Alene, the handpicked, and they're there. Wow. Good. And when we kind of gave him our idea about, you know, Art of the Possible and the world being better. And so they brought their own material to it. So it's kind of interesting to pick material that they want to share, that they want to say.
Yeah.
So it's going to be just an
evening. And will that be at Hamilton Studios,
three nights only.
July 23rd through the 25th.
Okay.
And then beyond that, we're just trying to figure out what's next.
You've been really good. I mean, I think your plays, all of them have been so different, But there is this kind of common thread that runs through them.
Mothers.
Like mother issues. We both have extreme mother issues.
They're all about really complicated moms. We decided that that's actually the through line.
Both of them. I don't know.
Okay.
Other than that.
I was going to say hope.
Hope and mom. Hope
and mom. Or lack of.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, I do appreciate it. I think hope is there, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm really excited to kind of see what you guys pick to start. I guess there's a little more pressure as you start to build up.
Where do you go? Thing. Right,
we have something in mind, and we can't announce it because but it's and it actually might surprise people. It's a bit of a swerve for us, but it does go back to creating something that we think gives us hope. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that's what we need, that, right? The two of us, and I think people, you know, more broadly, but.
And even the theater scene has seemed to be just a little rough lately, you know? So, I mean, just.
Creating something.
And I don't want to, we don't need to be, we're the edgy theater.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't want to lock us into any sort of particular genre or anything.
And we're living in very edgy times right now, right?
Yeah,
I mean, like, sometimes it's good to, like, step back and be entertained, you know?
Yeah, but still have something to say and something to bring to people, even if it's just a beautiful night, you know?
That's a major thing. And you know what I like about it, too, is, like, theater, you go to theater, it's not going to be AI. I mean, we aren't at the point where the robots are that good yet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, so it's real people doing real things.
Yep.
With real stories.
And taking a big risk on themselves.
Oh, I love that.
It's
all about connection, too. Yeah. Like, not just with the people on stage, but people in the audience. You're experiencing this thing that is only happening in exactly this way one time.
Yeah.
There's also something about Hamilton Studio that's so lovely because the connection is so different.
Yeah.
As far as the audience, like, you're not in seats like that. You're sitting at rounds and you're having a drink and you're doing this. So at intermission at other times, you see people like mingling and going across the room and talking much more than you kind of do in a theater lobby.
Yep.
You know, people get into just different conversations. And I don't know. It's kind of cool. I think maybe the show brings that out a little bit because they walk up to them and go, what the heck did we just see? It's kind of a cool energy in that space.
Well, and I think also, just as you mentioned, Maeve, like that boundary between the stage and the people along the edge of the stage is sort of permeable.
Yeah.
You know, you're almost on the stage.
Yeah.
And so it really cuts down some of those barriers that you might have behind a big proscenium arch. You know, the show is spilling out into the audience in a way. And I think there's something very powerful about that.
And, you know, I was a little bit worried that maybe there was going to be some audience participation, but people don't have to worry about that. That didn't happen.
Yes.
We did that once.
I know.
It's my least favorite thing in the entire world, by the way.
Is it?
I hate audience participation.
You know, it's just like people are uncomfortable enough, right?
It makes me cringe.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
Our first show involved a bunch of
I didn't have to be a part of it, though. I don't talk to me. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I'm just here. I'm an observer.
I don't like actors coming through the audience either. That's always been a pet peeve of mine. There's like two shows in the world, like Nonsense and Grease. Otherwise, stop it. I mean? Like, oh, we're coming from the audience.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Oh, I'm frightened.
I don't know. It's just like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm a proud. I'm a follower of the fourth wall.
Yeah.
More than I maybe want to be.
But I just think that you're right as far as that space. I was thinking another analogy of that space is almost like the Spokane Comedy Club too. I mean, as far as like people where you sit and people sit in front of you and you have nice conversations and get to like met some lovely people there. And it was just so, you know, it's just really, it's a really neat communal experience.
It is.
Yeah. And so have you now, what have you learned as far as like, this is what your third show?
Third show.
So what's kind of like working and what's not working? Yeah,
it's hard.
It is hard.
It's hard. Yeah. It's very, very hard. And and awesome and joyful and all those things. But it's hard. You know, we had one night where we come in and we set up every one of those platforms, you know, for one evening.
Wow. Wow.
Just so the actors, because it's hard to believe when you're up there what it really is like. You can't really explain that.
So
taking the set up, taking the set down and moving. I mean, it really.
It's also hard to predict just how, you know, I thought if you put puppets, sex, and violence on a poster, this thing would just sell out. No problem. And the sales have not been as good as I would have liked. And unfortunately, that puts us in a bit of a tricky situation in terms of like our next show. We're just trying to figure out, okay, what can we really do next? And I think we're both kind of dealing with some of the disappointment around that.
Yeah.
You know, because we put in so much work on this and we're so proud of it. And we both think it's so good. And we're hearing people say it's so good.
It was so phenomenal. And I thought, man, we're so lucky to get a seat, you know? And it was like, well, there was room. And I was like, this isn't right. And I don't know, you think it's the economy or just people are not
part of it? I think theaters now are suffering in general.
I do think the economy is playing a part because, you know, you fill up your gas tank right now. It's like, forget it.
Yeah.
I do think the content is somewhat of a blocker here in this community. I would think it would also be a draw. That was what I was banking on.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought, too. I mean, I would have paid people to walk out.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
honestly a little mesmerized or befuddled, I guess.
Yeah.
Puzzled.
Flummoxed.
Usually when I direct a show, you know, wherever I direct a show and... you know, how it sells doesn't really affect me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it affects my ego or my, you know, or my heart because
of what
I work into, put
art.
Into it. But it's not like, you know, it's not the money. I mean, you know, when the things, this is coming from the two of us for the most part. So.
And the way it's set up is like each show pays for the next one.
Yeah.
So if we have one that doesn't go as well as we would like, then it's like, okay, so then our options are a little bit more limited.
I guess the thing is, like, how do you find new people to go to the theater? You know, that's when I'm pimping the show or any show, that's my thing is to reach out to people saying, you know, I enjoy going to the movies too, and I enjoy sitting at home and watching a movie, but seeing a movie, you know, seeing people on a stage risking in front of you with a group of people that you may know, some people you don't know, other people, it's an incredible experience that you don't get any other place.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think people believe me when I say it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because.
And I bet if you could get half of those people into this show, maybe in particular, to experience it, it could be a whole eye awakening.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, I kind of thought there'd be a lot more young people at the show. That was the thing for me. It was like, well, this is going to be, like you say, kind of the, you know, the puppets and then the, you know, the subject matter. I thought, oh, this is going to be really appeal to young folks.
But it disappoints me in a sense of, I hope we haven't become a community with, especially in theater, that we water down everything we do because we only can do what is a guaranteed sell.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and that's because that's disappointing. Yeah. Like if we only can do things that, okay, this will work for sure.
Right. I mean, I like the sound of music too, but like we don't want to always be doing the sound of music. Yeah.
So it leads us down a path. You know, it's like we want to do these shows and go, oh, this is good. We love this one. Oh, this would be cool. But then you have to come around and go, but are people going to want to see it? And if you don't even know the name, if you don't know the name, you're not going to go.
Yeah,
right. You know, right. And that's the thing, right? Yeah. Like, oh, I don't recognize that name. I'm not going to go to.
Yeah, one of the plays we were considering for the next one. It was a very, very dark comedy, and it's one that's never been performed here. But when we kind of looked at each other and we're like, I'm not sure we want to try to do that right on the heels of this.
Yeah.
Maybe try to do another kind of play, and then we can, you know, afford to do something like that. But we can't try to do two of those.
It's all a guess, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're putting out the best product we can.
Well, and I think, like, you know, kind of back up to what you were saying too, I think you do have people that will go to The Sound of Music or Rocky Horror or something because, like, oh, if you've seen our, oh, yes, I saw that. You know, like, almost like, you know, it's such an American thing to, like, oh, I got my stamp, you know, I got that stamped.
Right.
I saw
yes.
this.
Right,
thing,
right.
You know,
only see and, what you know, only do what you're good at.
Yeah. And it's like, well, there's so many things that you're not, you know, that you're never going to hear about that are so moving and so wonderful and will hit you so hard. And I think the show is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I just think people should,
Yeah. You know, Thank you. I think we think so too. Even more so than I ever thought it would when we started it.
We've been really amazed by the response.
And the response of the audience too, but I mean, the show itself way more than I thought.
When you guys, do you guys go to each one of the shows?
We do.
I run sound. So yeah, I'm.
Oh, are you running the board?
Yeah, he's running the board.
Is Don running the lights then?
No, we've got
Kim Roberts designed the lights, and and Nicole Dietrich is running the lights.
Yeah, yeah.
We kind of
have
a bit of a crew now. We had a costumer and a puppet maker, and we had we kind of had a whole.
Yeah. We got Michelle working.
We got Michelle out in front, and Mary George. We have stage man. I mean, so we're actually kind of have a kind of a team now. So
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And we just want to be able to keep going. So we hope that we get supported enough to make that happen.
That's the thing, right? I mean, like, it's not like you're going to make it rich doing this.
We're paying the actors, but
we're not paying ourselves.
Yeah. But you're going to be able to hopefully make more art. And I think that's another thing. And I know I sound like a broken record to people. I keep saying that if you want to fight destruction, you got to create.
Right.
And when enjoy creation, and this show is a creation.
Right.
It's a creation of, you know, human beings and puppets.
What it is to be human and all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't we tell people again how they can get tickets to go see this now that we've told them what it's about.
So Hand to God plays for 3 more performances this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in the Listening Room at Hamilton Studio. That's at 1427 West Dean in Spokane's West Central neighborhood. You can get tickets at www.theateronthetheverge.com. That's theater with an E-R on theverge.com. And you can get 20% off those tickets with code TAKE20.
Yeah. To add
20 is the numerals.
Yes. To add to your comment about people telling people what it's about, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
I have yet to discover a way to say what this show is truly like.
Absolutely.
The experience, there's no words.
Yeah. That's part of what makes it hard to sell.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. There's just no words. It's like.
Yeah, I think.
We can just say hammer.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Oh God. Yeah, I forgot about that. and as far as like the beverages, or you can get really good beverages there.
Oh,
and the pours are nice and big.
Oh,
the vibes in there.
What's that?
Have you had the charcuterie?
The charcuterie box?
It's fantastic.
Really?
They make them there. And
fresh daily.
And the beauty of that space.
Yeah.
Walking in.
It is. It's a historic space. They filmed The Basket in there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been great to us, too.
Oh,
it's
been
really lovely.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
they've been
really
great. And so I think hopefully people will take this opportunity, because once it's gone, it's gone. Everybody's on to other projects doing other stuff.
And that's also the beauty of theater, too. You know, once it's gone, that's it.
You
know,
it's like, so the next thing you guys will be doing is planning for this concert.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yep.
And then what are you doing? What else are you? What else have you been up to besides the show? I mean, maybe think back a couple. I suppose with rehearsals and stuff, you guys have been at it.
We've been at it. I just finished. Chris was in Emma, and then I directed Glass Menagerie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And then we just kind of plowed into that, plus work, plus life.
Yeah,
I've been working on a Substack. When doing some of my own personal writing. And and I'm really, really pleased with that. And we're actually talking about making it into a one man show.
So. Oh, that I should. I don't know if I've subscribed. I'm really bad about Substack and that.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah.
And then I read, like, if I get emails, I read the email, like, newsletters, but I never go on to Substack itself,
right.
It seems
right.
like.
Right.
I've got a Substack account, and I don't even really think I know what to do with it.
Yeah. I don't either. I read Chris's.
I just leave messages on it.
But
that's down. We definitely, I think, are going to produce a one-man.
What's the theme of your Substack?
So the theme of my Substack in general, it started off pieces about recovery and just getting sober. That's why I went down to LA. And that's what this show would be about, is that there's 6 pieces that kind of serve as this arc during my time in LA during the pandemic, getting sober. And and the name of the piece is Last House on the Block, because I went to this nonprofit rehab that is no longer with us, that we affectionately referred to as the Last House on the Block, for the people who had no other options.
Wow.
And there's I just think it it's been really powerful just to be able to have some distance to write about it.
Yeah.
And have gotten a really wonderful response. And
about adding like a piano underscore playing with through the piece.
And two vocalists. Yeah.
Not a musical in any way, but a play with.
Wow.
It's kind of
that'd be really neat.
We currently have that slated in January. We may move it up depending on right now it's slated for January.
So when your subject matter is about this rehab facility and what got you there and probably like lots of looking back on your life and incidents like that. But what do you do when you're done? Do you move on to, is that just done then? Or do you move on to something else? Or does that get,
you mean in terms of what I'm writing about?
Does it incorporate into a longer story or how does that work?
I have had several people encouraging me to look at turning it into a book and it does seem to be becoming something of a book. I don't know how it all fits together, but the pieces are more and more in place. And at this point, I mean, I've been writing, I have about 25,000 words at this point. So it's getting up to book length.
Yeah.
So but just being able to do some writing for myself. I've been a writer for a long time, but the last 20 years I've mostly been writing for tech companies.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Is it hard for you to write about yourself? I find it really I just have a hard time writing about myself.
Less hard. I think I have to have a little distance from it though.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of our show. We kind of ended on a down note, but this play is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm a better person for having seen it. And I'm looking at my puppets in an entirely different way. And I've written that if you're a minister and you're thinking about having a puppet ministry, you may want to go check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what can happen.
Yeah. What was it before you get your felt in your googly eyes? Yeah, that made me laugh. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Out and About. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
U.S. Department of Justice is to protect people from abuses by giant corporations. But DOJ's present inhabitants have twisted that mission bass-ackwards, using the agency to protect abusers from people seeking justice. For example, Big Oil. This massive polluter is insisting that government authorities must save it from its own transgressions. For a decade, multi-billion-dollar behemoths like Exxon have known that their fossil fuel emissions are increasing climate change, causing catastrophic destruction and deaths from intensified fires, floods, etc. Numerous lawsuits have now been filed demanding that the profiteers behind these horrific losses pay a fair share of the damages they've done. No, cried the Petro perpetrators, scampering to Washington and to Republican statehouses to lobby for retroactive blanket immunity from all responsibility. Sure enough, top GOP officials are racing to bail out this murderous industry, which, by the way, finances the political campaigns of these oily officials. But wait, there's more. Our so-called Justice Department has sued Hawaii and Michigan to deny a state's right to sue energy corporations that cause climate change. A GOP group of state attorney generals are proposing a nationwide liability shield that would preemptively excuse oil, gas, and coal polluters from any responsibility for climate change. Same group wants the federal government to cut funding to any state or city that sues energy corporations. And King Donald has decreed that the Justice Department stop all laws, policies, and suits that threaten fossil fuel production. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is blatantly corrupt plutocracy, not to mention stupid. To help stop it, go to Center for Climate Integrity, climateintegrity.org. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Hi, this is Lori. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake, Spokane, on the dial at 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM.